Hello, and welcome to the 14th episode of Let's Talk Iran, providing Iranian-American perspectives on current events and policies that shape U.S.-Iran relations and affect the Iranian-American community. This program is brought to you by the National Iranian-American Council, otherwise known as NIAC. I'm Nobar Elmi, and I'll be your host. I'm here today with Fariborz Mokhtari. Fariborz was a political science professor at Norwich University in Vermont before joining the Near East South Asia Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, D.C. in 2002. We discuss with Fariborz his latest book, In the Lion's Shadow, detailing the work of an Iranian Schindler by the name of Abdul Hossein Sardari during World War II. Thank you, Fariborz, for being with us today.
It's my pleasure.
You know, throughout the book, you detail Abdul Hossein Sardari's ability to befriend diplomats from all sides in order to effectively ensure the Iranian Jewish expat's departure from France. Can you explain Sardari's character in further detail? And more specifically, can you explain what compelled him, you know, despite being so young and obviously despite all of the obstacles that were present, what compelled him to take on the racial purity laws?
Well, first of all, I mean, there is some relationship to his upbringing, and I'll mention that, of course. But besides all of that, I mean, he was an Iranian. He was an Iranian, and he was helping his fellow Iranians first and foremost. And there is nothing strange about that. I mean, Iranians, we have been Iranians for 3,000 years. Mm-hmm. Being Iranian comes first. Being Jewish or Zoroastrian or Muslim comes second. These are things that happen when you have a nation that is self-aware for that nationhood for thousands of years. But, you know, now let's get to his character. He was born in a rather prominent family. His mother was a direct princess. In fact, his mother was the daughter of the sister of Nasser al-Din Shah. So he was born into a prominent, wealthy family, privileged family. But his father died while he was a child, I mean, very young, at a very young age. And his mother really did not pay enough attention to him. He wasn't the mother's favorite. And at a very young age, he was sent away out of the country, away from his relatives and siblings, to a boarding school. Well, the net result was that he grew up basically alone, and therefore that affected his character. A person who had been deprived of the affection that he needed as a child sought that affection through friendship, mm-hmm. and therefore he became a very good host. He cultivated friendships. A person who had been denied kindness could not be unkind to others. A person who had been deprived of his family and neighbor and the affection of his country and so on could not be unkind to others. A person who had known injustice could not be unjust to others. So therefore, these are parts of his character. Of course, when you're a person who cultivates friendship and enjoys company of friends, you enjoy the things that go with that. I mean, he enjoyed good food. He enjoyed being a good host. He enjoyed traveling. He enjoyed some of the trappings of the good life. So that explains a great deal of his character.
Throughout the book, it said that you employ several previously unpublished documents to help bolster your argument that, contrary to popular belief, Iran did not favor the Nazis. Why do you feel that this lesson is worth sharing, and what lessons can we learn from this time period that we can apply to present-day U.S.-Iran-Israeli relations?
That's an excellent question. Let me say one more thing about Sardari, because that relates to this. And that is Sardari. Of course, he wasn't a saint. He was a good human being, and he felt responsible for his actions to God, to his people, to his government. In other words, he was a person who took his actions with a sense of responsibility. Now, coming to your question, and you'll see how these two relate. Iran was invaded and occupied by a number of countries that wanted to show their occupation had a legitimate reason. They were in search of legitimacy for an act that really was not legally legitimate. After all, Iran had declared its neutrality and so on. And their own diplomatic representation, I mean, the diplomats from the United States, from England, and even Soviet Union at the time, had reported to their own governments, as well as diplomats from Germany and Italy, that the Iranians are maintaining their neutrality extremely strictly, and therefore there is no evidence that we can find that they are not being neutral. In fact, the British ambassador had written a note that we have not found any evidence, although we are sure there might be some. In any case, this was an allegation to legitimize their invasion. Now, the reason I bring this up is because my position, I mean, the fact that Iran was not in favor of the Nazi racial ideology is a fact. I bring it up because it's a fact. And bringing up a fact, a truth that has been buried under 80 years of untruth. But aside from that, there is another, and this alludes to your question. It is tragic that every time that one country or one nation tries to subject another one to hostility, war, and killing, and all those things that go with conflict and war, they start by demonizing the nation. And the process of demonization starts with these accusations that these people are doing things that are less than human and therefore they are not human, et cetera, et cetera. This was an allegation made unjustifiably against Iran at the time. Now, it has been repeated for 80 years to the point that now some of the Iranians have come to believe it. And this, to me, is shameful. And therefore, for that reason, this should be clarified.
My last question for you, unfortunately, mm-hmm. we're running out of time, so I just have one more, is mm-hmm. why did you decide to write this book now? Why are you sharing this story now? I would imagine it's something you've spent a significant amount of time researching and something you've been aware of for quite some time. But is there any relation because you saw what's going on in current day U.S.-Iran-Israeli relations? Was there a relationship as to why you said, okay, now's the time for me to bring this story forward?
The research on this book started in 2002, 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you know, to say that this came out just because now there is news from Israel that we should attack Iran, I mean, that just isn't the case. However, I was quite aware from the time I was a child in Iran. You know, we had Jewish neighbors, you know, we had Zoroastrian neighbors, and we had friends and so on. I knew that despite all the things that some people were saying, Iranians, in fact, had tried to do whatever they could to help their fellow Iranians. Now, I knew that was my gut feeling, but I didn't have evidence. It just so happened that around 2002, 2003, I found some evidence, and I called people and I verified it. I went to the National Archives, and I found documents. Then I found some survivors who could actually testify in person, and the result is this book. The general purpose of this was to, again, bring to light something that I think is inherently in the Iranian culture, and that is culture of tolerance, accepting others. That was important to bring up, I thought. And of course, the timing coincided with the current crisis. But the objective really was to illustrate that cultural tendency, that cultural endowment that we all have.
Well, that unfortunately wraps up our interview. Thank you again for taking the time to speak with us about your book, In the Lion's Shadow.
Well, you're most welcome, and thank you for calling me.
In the Lion's Shadow was published by the History Press in London in October 2011 and has been available on Amazon UK since. It is scheduled for publication in the United States in April 2012 and will be available on Amazon starting October 1st. And as always, please be sure to visit NIAC online at www.niacouncil.org.